This Bee Podcast Network show is presented by IXL. IXL's all-inclusive online teaching and learning platform simplifies EdTech needs and accelerates achievement in 95 of the top 100 U.S. school districts. IXL delivers personalized learning across a comprehensive pre-K to 12 curriculum, including math, language arts, science, and social studies, and it helps you assess student performance through actionable real-time insights at every level of your school or district. This one solution performs work that typically requires dozens of different tools. Want to find out why so many leading districts trust IXL? Visit IXL.com/BE. That's IXL.com/BE.
TL Talk Radio, Season 5, Episode 11. Welcome to Season 5, Episode 11 of TL Talk Radio, a regular podcast with Lynn Funihatten and Randy Ziegenfuss, where our goal is to engage you in learning, motivate you to share your work, and inspire you to lead for the change we need in schools for the digital age. I'm Randy Ziegenfuss.
And I'm Lynn Funihatten. Good morning, Randy.
Good morning, Lynn.
So, direct from Paris, France, this morning, for our guest, we're speaking with Craig Vezina, founder and executive director of Z-School, an online project-based learning nonprofit that helps young people harness their strengths and passions to further causes and solve the problems that they are most passionate about. Craig founded Z-School in 2016 and for almost 20 years served as a history teacher, guidance counselor, administrator in leading international schools. He's also co-founder of the augmented reality company, Realcast, and is passionate about the potential of immersive technologies to enhance teaching and learning. So looking forward to hearing a little bit more about what that can look like in our schools.
Yes. Yeah, so welcome to the show, Craig.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Let's start the conversation with a personal story about how you got connected to this work of releasing the power in our youngest generation to change the world by engaging with the issues they most care about.
Sure. Yeah. So just really brief background. I grew up in New England, small town New England, and went to college in small town New England. And so my top priority after college was to go and see the world a bit. And I found probably the best job right out of college at an international school in Salzburg, Austria. And didn't necessarily have the idea at that point that I would, you know, invest my life in education, but I certainly enjoyed it and ended up working in several other international schools in Croatia and in Paris. And your listeners may not know the international school system too much, but they're amazing schools. So you have you know, an American population. So these might be, you know, kids of diplomats, people from international businesses, or just families that would like to live abroad. But they are, as the name suggests, very, very international in makeup. So had an opportunity in 20 years in schools to see kids from different cultures, the way they think, to be very much inspired by, you know, their mindsets and their creativity. But just sort of thinking more and more, you know, how are schools, both in the U.S. and abroad, how are we helping students both with, you know, global citizenship education and sort of creative problem-solving education? And what I latched onto, especially in the last few years, is the sense that we're kind of missing opportunities with service learning. So in a lot of schools, for example, we do a fantastic job of getting buy-in, tell students that service is important, especially in America, we're really good at that. But I think that schools often fall back into, you know, what we've been doing since I was young, really, which is you have these clubs that you can sign up for, and, you know, they're longstanding, and they're sort of traditions. You're going to do bake sales, and you're going to do other things to raise some money. You're going to send a check. Perhaps you do something more on the ground, you volunteer, you go to a soup kitchen, things of that nature. And that's all good. It certainly has its place. It's important. But the bar is set pretty low in the sense that we're not necessarily inviting kids to be really creative and to actually think, like, what are my strengths? What am I passionate about? and what is the issue that I'm passionate about, and how can I bring those two together so that I can actually have a positive impact? And I think that's something that schools certainly want, but schools are trying to figure out, you know, how do we do that? What does it look like when we do that well? And so that's sort of the work that I set upon and try to connect with, you know, other like-minded people to figure out a way to do it.
So what are some examples of changing the world, some of these sort of big challenges that you see Generation Z taking on?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, we talk about changing the world, but as you know, all problems are local, and, you know, all impact has got to be local, at least in its roots. So, you know, in my mind, the spectrum of issues that kids are passionate about is really broad, and it can range from, you know, global climate change to bullying to LGBT rights to on and on down the line. I think the challenge is, how do you, A, help young people to kind of figure out what they're passionate about, which is easier said than done. And then how do you provide opportunities for them to do something with that? So, you know, right now, for example, we're involved in a number of projects, but the first goal is just trying to surface, you know, kind of crowdsource, if you will, what is it that these young people care about? And we're still in the process of figuring that out. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about Generation Z first, to try to give a big picture of, you know, how are these learners different from previous generations, and why is that important to us as educators?
Yeah, I think listening to previous shows, I think both of you have children, and I have four young daughters as well. So a lot of my thinking in the lens is through, like, just being a father and observing. But I certainly have read a lot of studies, even though it's early, about this generation, and they kind of confirm what I'm observing at home. So, for example, this generation has never known a world where a smartphone was not just a ubiquitous and ever-present, element in their lives. They've grown up in a world sort of post 9/11 where not only does the world seem smaller than it did in previous generations, but they're sort of bombarded with media all the time about different issues. And what we're learning is that this generation sincerely, authentically wants to be part of solutions, right? So they're not interested in superficial and passive service, if you will. They're interested in really having an impact. And even some studies are showing that things like salary and benefits, which will always be important, are kind of, you know, no more important than having a sense of, you know, purpose and actually doing good, which is really encouraging. Mm-hmm. Not all signs are encouraging. You know, we're pretty familiar also with, you know, a sense of lack of moderation with screens, and some of the things that happen online are certainly very worrying, but there's a lot of positive signs as well.
Mm-hmm. So having a 15-year-old, I personally experienced the lack of moderation with screen time. I think I may experience that myself sometimes too.
Yeah, I think whoever figures out a way to help parents with that problem is going to be a very wealthy person.
That would be a niche.
So tell us a little bit more about the work of Z School and how you're achieving your mission. And can you give us some specific examples and how our listeners might get involved in Z School?
Sure. So first of all, what I attempt to do with Z School is to consider what are the constraints of actual schools, right? Because Z School is not replacing brick and mortar schools. It never could. But it can operate outside those constraints. So for example, it's asynchronous. So we're digital. We have programs that kids can follow on their phones, again, meeting them where they are. That are bite-sized, that are swipeable, sort of all of the things that appeal to them. But we also are, I know you talked in one show with Tom Markham, who's yes. the author of the handbook on project-based learning. Mm-hmm. He's my co-founder. So we're very much a project-based learning program. And so, you know, once we give a foundation to young people, how can we get them sort of going on their own path to not only understand an issue, but to develop possible solutions to them? So there's that sort of coaching component as well, which is not as easy to scale as the curriculum piece, but nonetheless, you know, very important. And what Tom does in his work is really essential in working with educators on how to do project-based learning for real-world projects. Mm-hmm. So what we're doing right now is we have a special focus on this theme of moral courage. And the reason why is I found if you ever ask a kid, like, what's a problem that you care about? Or even ask an adult, what do you care about? That's a really tough question to answer. You would think it'd be easy, but it's not. But if you sort of approach it more from the heart or more from an emotional perspective, like what's an instance where you saw someone show moral courage, right? Then not only is it not so personal and therefore a little bit easier, but the instinctive answer is a very, very telling one. You know, it's who do I look up to and why do I look up to them? So what we're doing right now is a theme of moral courage, both telling the stories of people around the world who have used moral courage to solve a problem, but then inviting young people to tell just that. You know, who is someone in your life, everyday people, you know, people in your home, people in your school, in your community, how have they shown moral courage? And I believe through that, not only will we have, you know, a lot of inspiration, but we'll help people understand like the many forms that it takes and the many forms that it could take going forward.
As you're sharing this here, the thought is going through my head, and this, the challenge of us in education, we're sort of in this sort of insulated world, and you know, how much do we know as educators about those things that our kids truly care about? And obviously, we need to start with that conversation and have that conversation from the heart, like you say. But it's just, I think it's probably very foreign to many educators to be able to take that leap. And I'm wondering, do you see that as a barrier or a challenge as you're working to scale this idea up?
Yeah. And like I said, you know, schools perform an essential function, which, you know, we could never replace. But, you know, schools, you know, I was certainly guilty of this. Like we have a tendency to sort of add more on to what we expect from teachers. And some teachers are game and they're excited and some are not. But I think again, talking about the constraints, you know, one of the constraints is that we provide this type of conversation and training for teachers. We don't provide it for parents. And if you think about it, parents are, you know, the ones who are more likely to be talking to young people about these issues and how are they going to solve them. It's good for the family, but it's also just good for, you know, providing some kind of support structure. So to answer your question, we do want to provide, and we do provide professional development opportunities for teachers, but we want to kind of question all of assumptions and see not only teachers, but parents and coaches and other community leaders as teachers in this sense. So that's sort of a key part of how we can do this at scale. Mm-hmm.
I'm still connected to the moral imperative, thinking about, you know, how do you bring all of the families together too, right? Because we all have different ideas of what this moral imperative is. And how is that a unique challenge for the Generation Z learners and ourselves? So just sort of in thinking about this globally, we're here in the United States, you were from New England, you're over in France right now. Like, and how is that perspective different based on where you are? Sort of the local values, the global values, the family values. So a lot to think about. Hadn't thought about it in that context.
Yeah. And I'm not a philosopher. But you know, I do think that there's something about moral courage, which is truly universal, and just, it's about our humanity, right? Mm-hmm. So there's no political, religious, you know, divide that doesn't allow people to, you know, enter, you know, a question through that lens. And obviously we have different politics and beliefs. But the word moral, I think, is a really nice kind of guide to what this is about. Mm-hmm. And I would venture to say, even though we're still early, that if you were to talk to young people in South America and Asia and North America and Europe, that the types of feelings, the types of concerns would be very remarkably similar. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, going back to global citizen education, mm-hmm. Education is really, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm connecting to the Model UN global goals and thinking this, it would be hard for anybody to argue with any of those goals from where they are perspective, regardless exactly. of religion or politics. And I'm making yep. that connection to the moral courage. So interesting yeah. lens. Thanks for bringing that up and sharing it with us.
Yeah, absolutely.
So one of your videos on the Z School site features your talk at Big Bang Singapore in 2008, and we linked it in our show notes so that our listeners can check it out. And here you shared some thoughts about technologies and education, particularly AR and VR. How do you see primary and secondary education using these tools for powerful learning experiences, you know, especially as we move into this fourth industrial revolution?
Yeah, yeah. And so your listeners don't think that I'm all over the map. You know, there's sort of a method to my madness, and why I'm interested in these technologies is, you know, again, as a father as well, that there's no question these are going to be extremely powerful, and they're going to in a lot of ways shape what the future will look like, and for better or worse. And I feel like with the internet, which, you know, it kind of grew not so long ago, that we just kind of react all the time. Mm-hmm. And we have an opportunity with artificial intelligence and augmented reality, virtual reality in these early stages to say, this is coming, it's coming in a big way. How can this be used for good? And not only as adults, how can we think about that, but how can we engage young people in that conversation? So for example, virtual reality, augmented reality could just be used for violent video games. Mm-hmm. Certainly will be. We all want to avoid that. So let's be proactive in thinking about it. So as an example, one of the things that our augmented reality company is working on is how do we help young people understand history through this technology in places where history actually happened. So I'm in Paris, awesome city for history. And a lot of times I would take students to a castle, and, you know, it was beautiful and it was cool, but and they would hear the guide kind of walking them around as a group, you know, this is what happened, whatever, whatever. But what if we used augmented reality to actually bring the history alive in that authentic context? So we work, for example, with a medieval castle, and you have a knight where the knight is telling you what's happening with the English invading during the Hundred Years' War. And he's asking you to do things to help the situation, and it is like a video game in that way. But when you have that type of experience, not only is it quite memorable, but in fact, the brain doesn't do a great job of distinguishing between, you know, was that real or was it not? Like, the brain research tells us that augmented reality, virtual reality, they kind of leave the same type of deep imprints as real reality, which is scary. But also quite interesting if you think about the potential for education. So it's very early days, but we're using it for history for now. But the day is probably not too far off when this will be also a ubiquitous technology. And it can certainly be used in exciting ways for education.
Mm-hmm. And we're just starting to see that now and thinking, you know, maybe we didn't realize how the iPhones were going to become so yeah. ubiquitous, and, you know, we didn't realize the power of that device, and that's probably where yeah. we are right now. We don't realize the power of these emerging technologies.
Yeah, and I can give you an even simpler example. You've probably seen some of the Google experiences with Google Cardboard, but, you know, not everyone will have the chance to come to Paris. But with this technology, you can kind of have the next best thing, where you can go to the Louvre and you can see some of the works of art, and it's just a much more dynamic, interesting experience than reading about it in a book, for example, or even a two-dimensional YouTube video. So already there's a lot of use cases out there, but the technology is just going to become stronger and stronger going forward.
So a lot of connections here in our conversation that I personally have been making in terms of thinking about the future. That's something that we're very interested in here, but also how do we tap into this generation and elevate their voice in the change that we're trying to bring about. So appreciate that in our conversation today. Mm-hmm. So before we wrap this up and invite you to share what's next for you, we have a couple of lightning round questions that we ask each of our guests this season. So we have three, and if you could just give us a quick response, and then we'll make sure that those resources that you share get put into our show notes for our listeners to access. So who is one expert our listeners should connect with to learn more about this idea of releasing the agency of Generation Z to change their world?
Well, there's lots of well-known people that I'm sure your listeners know of, people like Ken Robinson, Tony Wagner, and others. What I think is less known are people who are actually doing this, you know, so using young people's creativity and innovation in ways that are you know, really inspiring and impactful. So I would point again to Tom Markham, who is just a great expert in project-based learning, who works with schools all around the world and who has seen what this looks like when it's done well. So Tom is spelled T-H-O-M. He's got a fantastic book called Redefining Smart, which I recommend to your listeners.
And we've had Tom on the podcast a couple of times, so we'll definitely link to his work as well as the couple of podcasts that he's worked with us on. So second question, if you were recommending one book to our listeners on this topic, what would it be?
Well, a great book that I only discovered in the past year is it's called The Magic of Thinking Big, which is it's pretty old at this point. I think it's been around for about 60 years. But it's essentially all about our mindsets and, you know, what are sort of the constraints or limitations that we put on ourselves even before we begin tackling a problem. You know, what is sort of the negative baggage that we take on, and if we were to break free of that, you know, how might we frame things differently? So it's a fantastic book, easy to find. It's called The Magic of Thinking Big.
Interesting. I've not heard of that one. I'm going to go check it out, see if I can get a copy and read it. Last question. What online resource person do you access to fuel your passion for this work? So how do you keep learning?
Yeah, absolutely. I love podcasts, for example, and your podcast is a good example of one that I recommend to your listeners. As a website, there's a fantastic website called 200women.com. So I think it's just the number 200 and then women. And this was an amazing project led out of New Zealand, where they did these profiles of 200 women across the world who are working in different areas, very heroic, each of them. Many of them totally unknown, some of them very well known, like Winnie Mandela. You know, some of our partners are featured in there. But what I love about the work that they've done is it's very much, going back to Generation Z, it's very much presented in a way that aligns with just the way we interact with media these days. So it's fantastic video, a lot of fantastic visual, certainly some text, but it's a nice multimedia combination. But the profiles there are incredibly inspiring, incredibly enlightening. And again, going back to global citizenship, giving you kind of voices from all around the globe.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for those resources. That's been a nice addition to our podcast this season, and we get to sort of take a peek inside the brain of our guests and what they're thinking about and how they continue to learn. So thank you.
Absolutely.
So last question, what's next for you, Craig? What are you working on now, or what are you working on near the future that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yeah, so the Moral Courage project that I mentioned is one that we're in the thick of right now, and we expect that before the end of this calendar year, we'll have something on our website that we think is going to be very interesting to parents, to kids, to educators, and I'll share that link with you. Your listeners might also be interested to know that we have close to ready basically a student advocacy course, which is designed to be both Ooh. Self-directed and project-based. And again, thinking about the constraints of schools often want this, but they can't shoehorn one more thing in to the, you know, 9 to 3:30 schedule. So it's something that that is designed, you know, for students of different ages, for teachers who want to learn more about this, and even for parents. So that's something that is going to be ready probably mid-November. And so on our website, you'll be able to access that.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Craig. For our listeners, we've listed a bunch of resources in the show notes, the resources that Craig shared, as well as a couple of video links for some talks he's done. And we'll have all that available for you.
So thanks again, Craig. Glad we finally got connected and very inspired by the work that you and the Z School team are doing. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, both of you. And I really enjoy the show. Keep up the great work.
All right.
Very kind.
Each episode, we leave you with a question to think about with the idea of provoking reflection and conversation. This episode's question, what ways is your learning environment supporting learners to take action to create their world? And what have you learned today that can support your journey? If you've enjoyed this episode, would like to comment or check out the resources shared on the show, visit the show notes at tltalkradio.org and look for Season 5, Episode 11. That's all for this episode. We'll be back soon with another conversation featuring another innovative thought leader. Thanks again, Craig.
Thanks, Craig. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care.
Do you want to simplify your school's technology, save teachers time, and improve students' performance on state assessments? You can do it all, but don't waste another minute. Head straight to IXL.com/BE to learn how IXL's research-proven teaching and learning platform can help you achieve all of these goals. That's IXL.com/BE.